Realm presents Silverwing. Episode 1.
Sharda watched him slip for the third time. "Did you wear the non-slip shoes?" Afton ignored her frown. Illuminated by his headlamp, it made her long scar transform into a snake attacking her brows.
"I'm wearing the non-slip shoes. Stop bothering me. I need to be clear."
"You can't be clear if you're unconscious."
"I'm fine. My feet are fine. This cave is slippery. I'll be more careful."
"Are you sensing anything? What are you getting?"
"Do we have good communications with Dip up top? It's different. Feels weird."
"Communications are fine. Dip, one squawk if you can hear us. We'll signal again when we found something." She told the duo keeping watch over their campsite and vehicle. Sharda paused and swung her head from Afton to the darkness waiting ahead. Light splashed the craggy walls like flashes of insight, too quick to glean. "Definitely a dragon down there?"
"Definitely."
"Asleep?" The lack of hope in Sharda's voice banked on otherwise.
"Not totally. Feels weird."
"If it led you here, this might be the one." They hadn't fully entered the large cavern. Silhouetted by the cloudy light of the coastal sunset, she fidgeted with the toggle on her rope printer.
"What now, Sharda?"
"You sure about this being safe?"
"This is what we've been looking for."
"I mean, I don't doubt your diviner's connections to the Endra Hunj."
"My connections? Nobody even knows what that connection is or how it works. I don't even, and I have it."
"If you sense it, shouldn't other diviners be here getting it too? I just want us to be safe."
"I sense it because I look for it. Others ignore it. No profit for them."
"No profit," Sharda dourly agreed. Afton gestured for Sharda to join him.
"You're just feeling the ghosts of all those suicides off the cliffs back there. This ain't time to get jittery. Time for righteousness. You right?"
Sharda's resolve to be the voice of reason faltered. She glanced over her shoulder at the approach of evening. The moons would be visible once the clouds traveled out over the turbulent sea.
"Are we doing this?"
Afton put to her. "Yes."
"And if this cave isn't the one, we move to the next."
The two made a show of briefly checking their harnesses, buckles, and gear with pointless tugs or glances. They entered the cave in silence. The dragon's scales were lovely. Olive green, massive, unusually warm. Amphit ran her ungloved hand along them, knowing the slight touch along its belly by a small, old human didn't matter. A sleeping dragon wasn't a menace. It was money, plain and simple. Of the ragged few people with the knack for dousing dragons, she neither considered herself the best nor the worst. True, other diviners swore each time they doused, they saw something. Some deep, cosmic vision. But they were liars. Liars and charlatans and mystery builders. Amphit supposed such people were necessary in this hellish world. At 65 poor years, she needed only two things: food and the finances to accept retirement when it came. If dead Endra Hunj were the means to either, so be it. Her mother had hunted dragons. She hunted dragons. It was the way of it. She replaced her glove. The pole lights she'd placed around the beast, along with her headlamp, gave just enough stingy light, but she'd worked in less, much less. She unfolded a battered jack from her tool belt, pulled the scale outward as much as she could to insert the old contraption, then slid the knife, named the Adagio,
inward and pressed. When the blade was in by its full length, she depressed the plunger in its hilt that delivered the poison, plus a measure of her own blood from perforations in the blade's sides and tip. This dragon was large. The entire cave smelled of its stale, thin exhalations, centuries of cells sloughing off, and the ecology flourishing around the beast's ambient warmth. The poison took days to do its work. Omphit pulled her folding chair from her slim pack and sat facing the drop-down opening. Her rotary musket lay heavy across her knees. Gods help those who tried to take what was rightfully hers. By the second day, the Endlahunj's subtle warmth lulled her into a deeper sleep, deeper dreams. The emptied wine flask hadn't helped, but her son had been on her mind. Tears or rage never made that particular ghost go away. Bitter monk wine did. Whisper ropes dropped into the cave. Very little light entered the underground space, which was why scavengers attacked during earliest morning, when bodies and thoughts were ill-formed. Scavengers, those who couldn't divine, but were always prepared to steal, knew to leave the more armed and protected, successful diviners alone. The unsuccessful ones lived under a scattered network of eyes. For those poor scavengers, there was only one way to lay definite claim to an Endlahunj, through the blood of others. Twin bodies descended, silent as spiders, dropping quickly to gain the element of surprise. They stopped above the beast, the sound of their leather palms squeezing the whisper ropes, no louder than legs sliding across lovers. They pushed off one another, gaining swing momentum. Dragons typically slept with their massive heads nearest the entrance of wherever they hid themselves. The scavengers swung silently until enough momentum gathered to drop them atop the great beast's neck. Each paused to gauge the cavern's breathing, then climbed down scale by scale to stand on either side of the sleeping woman. A huge gloved hand clamped over Omphit's nose and mouth, forcing her head backward. Her skull slammed against the dragon. She flailed in panic, her neck exposed. Never leave a vulnerable space open. That was the law of this land. She immediately thought of Afton, imagining the scene of her death were she ever found and were he ever informed, and she kicked out. The hardened tip of her boot caught under a kneecap, gaining a yowl of pain from the attacker, but not the satisfying crack of bone. She let herself fall away from them and rolled quickly to her feet, keeping the injured party between her and his accomplice, knowing his leg would keep him from pivoting too quickly toward her. She grabbed frantically for anything on the campsite floor to use as a weapon and flung items at their heads, every action moving her farther away, every block bringing them a step closer to her. Her gun had been knocked to the cavern floor. Neither scavenger went for it. Excessive noise wasn't a friend in these kinds of deaths. It brought others. Omphit reversed tactics, throwing the attackers off by suddenly charging them. She elbowed the smaller in the head, still keeping herself facing the injured side of the other. Grabbing her gun, she ran around the head of the sleeping dragon for enough distance to get a proper shot off. The scavenger stopped. The woman murmured to the other, "Is it bad?" "No." She nodded what she wanted him to do. He nodded back. The woman went the opposite way and hopped the dragon's tail, climbing stealthily along its wide back for a few seconds, then froze. Her accomplice would be frozen, too.
"Leave me what's mine."
He waited till he saw his partner crest the dragon's shoulder. When he moved out and made just enough threatening noise to distract Omphit, the other jumped. Omphit whirled. The jumper caught the wayward glint of a knife in the old woman's hand. The blade jabbed deep and cracked a rib. The intruder's death transformed her into a heavy, unwieldy mass, slamming both women to the hard ground. Omphit's breath whooshed out. Before she could inhale, a hand clamped her throat and pinned her, even as she tried to roll the dead body off. She fired her gun wildly, hoping to catch something soft. The choking hand didn't let up. He was insanely strong, and she was old. She would die. Absolutely alone. In a cave. No. She fired again. And again. He punched her in the side of the head once, but then she heard a scream. He fell backward. She had 2 rounds left. Tears blinded her eyes. Snot caked her mouth. He keened loudly on his back, trying to hold on to a part of his hip that was no longer there. Such noise wouldn't do. The wan bit of morning light that eventually filtered into the cavern showed 3 prone bodies, 1 dragon and 2 small, watched over by a diviner now wide awake, reloaded gun in one hand, flask in the other. They called it a bazaar, but Omphit remembered what real bazaars were like: clustered, crowded, jostling places full of bodies, wants, and things. This was indoors. It was clean, and sentries were posted in easy view. And the queues? The queues were terrible. She waited in one and wished she had her gun. A mocker had decided to attach itself to this line. Killing dragons is a sin against our ancestors, the ancients, and the planet itself. The blue-clad form speaking made sure to not make eye contact with anyone, but with everyone. Omphit wondered how they even got into the bazaars, let alone were tolerated. She wouldn't be surprised if they were hired by the bazaars just to annoy people. The people in line hunkered down in their beliefs. This was their way of life, and it worked. Damn the bloodline of any who said otherwise. She had never ever seen a mocker accosted or ejected. The unspoken rule was merely to ignore them. "Claim," said the attendant when she finally headed the line. She handed him a vial of her blood, then extended her thumb for the on-site sample. As far as she was concerned, the only good to come from the bazaars was they'd sped up the blood match verification process, which meant getting paid just that much sooner.
Ochre's plain. 200 chitons, at least, under Omphit Dahl, properly beaconed.
Solitary claim?
Solitary.
Notations?
2 deaths.
The attendant allowed a moment of humanity. His eyes softened.
Are you injured? I am an old woman with a bruise on the side of her head.
Omphit thought.
No.
Such a minor injury claim would be summarily denied.
Justifiable homicide?
Yes. He stamped 3 discs, gave her 1, and slid the other into a pending slot. She enjoyed the weight of the disc in her fist.
I haven't seen you before. Thank you.
He smiled and nodded that their business was over.
I'm a transfer from Gep District. 3 to 5 days to contact you. Thank you for your service.
This one wouldn't make her rich. She knew that. The last dragon to make a diviner rich had been killed a century ago. That dead dragon's namesake lived on as the largest processing concern on the continent. Scarus. In the old colloquial, it meant broken wing. Legend had it that Scarus had killed 15 diviners before a broken wing made it weak and infected enough to be yanked from the sky. But that was nothing but fodder for idiots. No dragon had awoken since they were first discovered tucked away in lost, inhospitable places. When dragons appeared awake, it was always reported later that any activity was a form of sleepwalking. No, dragons did nothing but dream. And what use was a dream in this world? Omphit, on her bed, looked at the haphazard stack of unread books at her head. Afton's books. Dersham, the last lover she'd ever had, had told her to throw them out. Instead, Dersham had to go. Any man who couldn't understand a mother's love for her son was no one to be with. 3 to 5 days. Time to rest. Time to sleep. But not to dream. Dreams were for people with hopes for better things. Omphit tried her best never to dream. When Omphit dreamed, the dragon's shadow turned the world into night. But her name was not Nightwing. It was Bringer. In the old tongue, Ba'asi. The old tongue was all that was left of the old times. Even the sense of wonder was gone. Children barely looked up when she flew overhead. Her scales were silver, edged with blue. At times, they caught glints of light, and she'd become a twinkle of wind during the day, a moving constellation at night. She preferred the day, flying low to store as much of the sun's warmth as possible, spiraling upward through clouds and stinging cold particles only when certain moods hit, a desire to commune with pain, to better understand something. Something essential about the universe. They were the times when the sleeping part of Omphit knew it was wrong to dream of herself as a dragon, but she didn't anyway. Bringer didn't care. Flying felt good. And besides which, the awake Omphit wouldn't remember.
"The dragon mouth is not articulated for speech,"
said a face on the vintage screen. "Yet all the myths have them capable of speech," said a younger version of the face. This was the father-son show, still popular despite both the father and the son having been dead for generations. It was rare to find a seat in the observatory by the time Omphit arrived. She'd had a bad night of dreaming, and a worse day cooped up by her four walls. Once the tinkerers had gotten power restored and decided how and where they would parcel it out, the squat, ugly gray building with its large rectangular windows was deemed an important gathering place. Thousands of distinct broadcasts were stored as magic. Of course, the tinkerers knew it was data, but the ruse entertained most citizens. The tinkerers showcased one selection per day on every available screen in all observatories. She felt safe here, even with the smells, temperaments, and general peopleness of the place. It didn't do for a diviner to feel part of something, but it was good to feel, if not welcomed, left alone. Father-son spoke of dragons often. Omphit doubted anyone in the audience had ever seen an actual dragon. Not that it mattered. Dragons fueled their machines. Simple as that. Still, it might have been interesting to watch a face fall when told how the push of the blade through dragon flesh felt like knifing through mounds of dough, or that the mucosal layers at the base of the neck scales smelled of tar and flowers. They didn't need to know about the Endrahunj. These people only needed father and son. A woman older than her, almost without looking up, made space for her at a long, glossy black table. Omphit dropped her rump extra hard, as if the gravity of acceptance burdened her.
"Sit elsewhere if this is a hardship," said the woman, her attention on the screen.
Omphit grunted. The older woman patted her hand.
"I cooked today."
"Stew?"
A coarse whisper from a coarse woman. The elder nodded.
"I like your stew."
Both watched silently for another hour or so. Sun was attempting to belittle two scientists when they left. Omphit made a mental note to remember this particular broadcast and return someday in hopes of seeing it play out. She didn't understand most of what was in Afton's books, but the young lady on screen refusing to be drowned out by Sun's volume seemed like she would. Omphit liked her. She wanted to see whether the scientist would win her war. Dahlia, the elder, and her sister had a home a short walk from the observatory. Her stew was fabulous. Her conversation, less so.
"More scars,"
Dahlia noted, eyes on her sharper than any night bird's. Omphit grunted and tore bread.
"I'm just trying to make a living."
"They catch you drunk or sober?" "You've never been of a mind for one world or another anyway."
"New packs forming," said Dahlia.
"Packs are for young idiots. Nobody makes anything in packs."
"Heard about diviners being found unconscious. Ain't waking up."
Dahlia tried. Omphit and information about Omphit didn't part easily. Omphit grunted.
"Scavengers hit you on the head hard enough, you get a coma."
"Folks saying they ain't injured."
"Where'd you get this oh-so-verified information?"
Omphit looked directly into her sister's weathered, concerned face.
"Food end of the bazaar."
Omphit nodded.
"Learned discourse all around there."
They ate in silence. At this time of day, the evening sky looked best filtered through the haze. Afton, after reading one of his books, had called it pollution, and Omphit had summarily shushed him away. Nobody called it pollution anymore, just the sky. Purple, slightly green, with the almost set sun giving the bottom edges of the thick, dark clouds one last hit of brilliance.
"Those scientists, they travel in packs."
Dahlia tried again. She knew there'd been no word of her nephew, but she had to put the subject on the table, if nowhere else. Letting the subject be wouldn't bother Omphit. It had been 3 years.
"Any of them find a dragon and wake it, you let me know."
"What if he did?"
"Then I'd think somebody could have let his mother know."
Omphit ended that line of conversation. Afton had shouted at her over dinner 2 weeks before he disappeared.
"You killing them is wrong. We're going to find one awake, or we'll wake one ourselves. The Endrahunj aren't here for our convenience. They shouldn't be used as fuel." "Yeah, but you eat, don't you?"
Not the most motherly response she could have given. Children were hell. It didn't help that Afton found something new to be passionate about every half hour. Fancied himself a scientist. Fancied he was grown. Fancied he'd wake a dragon. Omphit had grunted and turned her back on his foolishness. Now she chewed her bread and swallowed hard.
Wake a dragon. No one had done that. No one knew what would happen.
No one understood their shared catatonia and, besides, the world was buried under enough problems. Since the discovery of the first one by the divine, the consensus had been to let sleeping dragons lie. That accidental discovery of one who had died sleeping in the path of a lava flow was what kept humankind moving forward as much as it did. What couldn't be done with the bodies, blood, and oil of dragons could be listed on a very short note. It was just so damn hard to find the damn things, and very, very dangerous. Omphit's spoon clinked into her emptied bowl. She was due for a reward.
"Is there pie?"
"Yes."
"I'll have some pie."
Later, she went home and she cried, and she damned her sister's kindness. Then she drank. When she woke up, she spread her maps, grids, and surveys and set to work divining where she might find another beast. Afton and Sharda circled the dragon cautiously, slowly. Neither spoke. The beast was gorgeous, even in the underground dank of this pit. Tufts of silken gray hair grew between rows of diamond point plates of the deepest blue either human had ever seen, bouncing light back at them from their head and shoulder lamps. It was large, but not huge, and slept in a tight coil, its head buried within itself. They hugged the perimeter of the cavern as they made their circuit. No signs of consciousness, no movement to even suggest the thing was alive. If it exhaled, it disturbed not a single dust mote. Its great leathery wings cupped its body as if offering the dragon as a gift to anyone finding it.
"Are you sensing anything?" Sharda asked.
"No," Afton replied, a little sharper than he meant to. Sharda was the last person he ever wanted to hurt. He directed the anger at himself. "It should be awake."
"Does it still feel different?"
"Yes, it feels like it's thinking, not dreaming."
Sharda stopped their motion with a hand to his upper arm. "So it knows we're here?" They played their lights across its body. The beast, if aware, gave no outward indication. "Maybe it's meditating. Do they meditate?"
"I have no idea."
When he'd joined as the diviner, he'd hoped that'd be the only expertise they'd ask of him. Dip and Sharda weren't experts at anything either, but they were knowledgeable and cared about things outside themselves, cared about the world's connective tissues. They knew that in any story of the world, there were multiple branch points. They wanted to be a point. Afton could only offer a weak, "maybe," and hoped she heard the plea to leave this place. The sooner they left, the less he would feel like a failure, and the less chance they might no longer need him. He had nowhere to go.
"Sit with your feelings. Think on them."
"What?"
"Feel what made this one different. We can use that."
"We can't tell Dip this is another failure. He's financing this."
"That's his fault for having money, isn't it? And he'll kind of figure things out when we're not introducing him to a waking dragon. The Endra Hunj hasn't moved. But what's our mission? The truth regarding Endra Hunj. He's financing the truth. You're bringing it. Let's sit, wait, and see. Meditate."
Sharda nudged him downward with a hand on his shoulder.
"The last time I did that, you fell asleep."
"Meditation's boring."
30 minutes became a restless hour. An hour became two. Neither of them knew who fell asleep first, but both woke at a clawing at the earth. They drew together, hip to hip, breathing shallowly. Minutes passed. No additional noise. More minutes, until another hour had gone. The tight grip of their clasped hands told them that the raspy drag had been real, despite the silence.
"Do you feel anything?"
No great eye reflected headlights back at them. There was no change in the beast's position. Its head remained tucked. They stood. Tentative, measured steps drew them forward, their eyes trained on the dragon's spine. Once close enough to see the ground clearly, their light searched. The sound had filled the cavern. A quick disturbance. There. A fresh furrow in the hard ground. And the talon that made it.
You're listening to Silverwing by ZZ Claiborne. Silverwing is a Realm production. Listen away. Silverwing is written by ZZ Claiborne, produced by Diana M. Foe and Mary Osadolahi. Executive produced by Molly Barton, Marcy Wiseman, and Julian Yap. Associate produced by Alexis Latshaw. Performed by Sonia Simmons. Audio produced by Tidef Studios. Additional editing by Sam Bagala. Cover art by Kendall Thomas. Executive in charge for Realm, Mary Osadolahi. Find more shows like Silverwing by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.